Hello there, and thanks for joining me on the podcast today. Violent pre-teenagers. That's my topic. How do you deal with a child in your home? Probably the age of 12 or 13, 14, 15. Kind of a pre-teenager or early teenager. How do you deal with them when they're violent? Out of control. And the violent behavior is common. The violent behavior is frequent. And the violent behavior is excessive. And the violent behavior can no longer be tolerated, no longer dealt with, driving the parents almost to the point of giving up and wanting to turn the child back over to the court system or to the child welfare system or to the grandparents or send them back to the natural mother or the natural father rather than from the step-parents or, you know, whatever. Teenagers, pre-teenagers can be violent and drastically violent and desperately violent, coming to the point where the parent now is desperate to stop the violent outbursts. What do you do? Not an uncommon behavior that comes into my office as a psychologist and seeing a lot of teenagers, a lot of pre-teenagers, a lot of parents, a lot of family problems. Not a problem that cannot be dealt with. It can be. But it's going to take a lot of effort and going to take a lot of cooperation and a lot of coordination. So here's the deal. When a child that is out of control and violent comes into my office, there's a couple things that have to be said right straight away and understood and accepted by all parties, the parents particularly. One is that the violent behavior is generally a result of an undeveloped brain. Now you have to remember, the brain does not fully develop until age 25. So if you have a 15-year-old kid, a 14-year-old kid out of control and not being able to control his own behavior, you know, he's got a neurological problem in the sense that his brain is not yet developed and probably not even developed to the point of his age, chronological age. So he's probably still in the early stages of development where the brain does not have the ability to put restraint. The brain doesn't have the ability to control outbursts and what is said and what is acted upon. So you have to understand that we're dealing with a brain problem no matter what else might have happened in the child's life. So the parents have to understand neurology, basic neurology. Secondly, parents have to understand that violent behavior requires boundaries. You know, you don't control a child unless you set boundaries. It's like a wild animal. You control a wild animal by setting some boundaries. We put up fences. You know, we put on leashes. You know, we do different kind of things to restrain and control and manage an animal that's out of control. We do the same thing for the child that's out of control and violent. What are the boundaries that need to be set? What are the boundaries that are being set or in operation at this point in time, and what needs to be set forth? And then, thirdly, parents have to understand that there are limits. Expectations are limits. There are certain things that you do, there are certain things you don't do. You certainly don't hit mother. You certainly don't hit big sister or little brother, or you don't hit your dad, or you don't hit the grandparents, or you don't hit the neighbors, you don't hit the teacher, and so on. There are expectations, there are limits to behavior. And we better understand that and be all on the same page to make sure we all agree what the limits are for this particular child. So that has to be understood. And then the next thing that has to be understood is what is being done now to stop the behavior, to alter it, to modify it, to redirect it. What's working, what's not working. What works once in a while, but what doesn't work all the time. You have to understand what those are. So we have to have that kind of discussion. And then make sure that expectations are stated before an event, before going somewhere rather than afterwards. In other words, before going into a restaurant, you talk about the expectations of behavior in the restaurant before you even go in. If you're going to go to school, you talk about the expectations of behavior in school that day before school, not after school. If you're going to go to church, you set forth the expectations of behavior in the church before going to church, not after church, not after Afterwards, it's usually punishment. Afterwards, in other words, the child already blew it. And now you're mad and you're going to try to deal with it afterwards, hoping that the child will remember it the next week when you go back to church or you go back to the restaurant or whatever. No, you don't do that. Every day, every situation, you set forth the expectations before going into a particular event or into a particular place. Now, those are just some of the things that have to be said right straight away and take about 15 minutes of a first appointment and talk about those kind of things and get them out on the table, because we're going to come back to those things in therapy. Those are the things we're going to polish, we're going to refine them, make them even better and stronger as we come in therapy. But a parent has to have an understanding of those concepts. And then you have to ask the parent, do you agree? Do you want to move forward? Do you understand that these are basic principles and basic behavioral guidelines and behavioral control factors? And if a parent can understand that and accept that and work with that, then we can move forward. If not, the appointment is basically over. It's not going to be very helpful. Okay, now here's the fact of many of these kids who become violent and hit everybody else and will not cooperate and will not behave and will not be obedient and not be reliant, not be respectful. It's a tough one, you know, to deal with. So, these kids often have already come to therapy, already been in therapy, already had different aspects. Parents have already talked to a lot of different people before they come to me as a therapist, or before the parent is really ready to do something about it. What does a parent do? Usually, what does a parent do or have done on their own before seeking professional help? Well, they usually talk to neighbors, they usually talk to grandparents, they usually talk to friends, they usually talk to their pastor, they usually talk to the pediatrician. They usually talk to a physician of some kind. They usually talk to a religious leader of some kind. They talk to the teacher. You know, they talk to each other. Sometimes they get a little help, sometimes they don't get any help. Sometimes they get help that may be helped for a little while, but it doesn't last very long. So in other words, parents generally have sought advice, but unfortunately that advice is not strong enough, or they don't follow through on it consistently enough. So you need to find out that. And then also, what we find in these parents of these kids that are violent is that they've often gone to the pediatrician and gotten some medication. Now, never with a kid that's out of control, never with a kid that is in trouble, do you give medication without counseling. Never. You always give medication with counseling. Or you give counseling without medication. Counseling without medication is better than medication by itself. But there's a distinct advantage when there is a medication being applied and counseling being applied. Now, when I talk about counseling, I'm talking about two kinds of counseling. One is for the child, and one is for the parent. My typical way of performing in my office is to see a child for about a half hour and see the parent for about a half hour. Sometimes I see the parent first, sometimes I see the child first. But you want to make sure that you have a process by which the parents have counseling. Sometimes the parents go to a different counselor, and the two counselors communicate and coordinate. Where the parents meet with one therapist and the other therapist meets with the child. But there's coordination, there's cooperation between them. In other words, this is a major problem and you have to deal with it in a very major kind of way. You can't just kind of go to a doctor and get a medication and hope for the best. Can't do that. It's not going to work. You're wasting your money, you're wasting your time, and it's unethical for any physician, any doctor, any therapist to just administer a medication without any follow-up and without any opportunity to see how it's working and to coordinate with a therapist or a counselor in the community. It's the joint program, the cooperative program between the physician and the therapist that is the best arrangement. So make sure they have that kind of process in place. But then we also want to look at what we call the family patterns. What's gone on within this family that might have contributed to or created this violent behavior on the part of the child? Divorce, perhaps. The introduction of a step-parent, perhaps. The introduction of a boyfriend or a girlfriend into the life of a parent, perhaps. Those are all upsetting things to kids, especially pre-teenagers. They don't want new people coming into their life, other parents coming into their life. They reject that. And they often reject it violently. Are they being abused by one parent? Are they being ignored by one parent? Are they being overly criticized by one parent? Are the parents very different in their discipline? One very firm and one very lenient. One almost being abusive and one being very tolerant and lenient. Our parents, one communicates, one does not communicate. Mother talks, but father does not talk to the kids. I mean, there can be very major differences in the family patterns of a child that's violent. And you got to find out what those are. And you have to assess those. And you get that from the kid, you get that from the parents. And you get that from your own studies of that family relationship and pattern. But you got to find out what the differences are between the mother and the father and how that kid is being raised. And if the kid is being raised by a one-parent family, by just the mother or just the father, then what's the problem with the absent mother or father or the absent parent? Are they contradicting? Are they giving mixed messages? Can the kid do almost anything at one parent's home? Can do almost nothing at the other parent's home? Is one very strict, one very, very lenient? The rules in one home are very different from the rules of another. Kids are confused by that and upset by that and bothered by it. They do much better when there's a consistency. Sometimes we need the intervention of the court to control all that. We need the intervention of a parent to take responsibility. Sometimes we need the intervention of a therapist that will just take over and direct the traffic, so to speak, direct the relationships that's going on between a parent and a child. It might even mean a referral to a neurologist to make sure that the brain is functioning normally, or that there's been some kind of an anomaly or some kind of an impairment or some kind of an injury to the brain that might account for this disruptive behavior. So a neurologist may necessarily be brought into the picture and studies and see what's going on there. As I said earlier, it's a brain behavior problem. And a neurologist might be very helpful just to either clarify that there is or there is not a neurological anomaly present that might account for the violence and the lack of control on the part of the child. Then we want to look at the school. What's going on in school? Is bully behavior going on in school? Kids that are bullied in school will tend to bully in their home. Kids that have been bullied in the home will tend to bully at school. So is bully behavior going on? Is the child being forced to accept certain kind of work patterns that he can't do? Is the teacher assigning him assignments that he's just not capable of handling? Does he have a hearing problem? Does he have a vision problem? Does he have a learning problem? Can he process information? Can he think through information? Can he learn? Every child has to learn how to learn, but can then this child learn? Or is the child having a learning disability? And therefore, teaching has to be modified. Classrooms have to be modified. Schools might have to be changed. Something may have to be done just to alter the... It's a complex behavior. So when you have a child that's violent, you have to look at it from a multitude of directions and make sure that we have covered our bases to find out why this is the case, but then to have an intervention plan in place to modify that behavior and make sure then that the child is rewarded and praised and affirmed and commended for appropriate behavior when it occurs. Obviously, inappropriate behavior is to be controlled, to be managed, to be punished. And appropriate behavior is to be praised and affirmed and strengthened. So basically, a parent has to decide, what behaviors do I want? And what behaviors do I not want? And then act accordingly with the child. Even a little bit of improvement requires praise and approval, because then you'll get more improvement. So the reinforcement plan, the reward plan for a child has to be thought through and considered and put in place so that the child is brought under control. The behavior is brought under control. And the child can now experience normal relationships. And the parent and child can have a normal relationship. You see, it's a complex issue. It's one that does not have one answer. It's one that probably does not have one professional that can handle the problem. It's going to take a multitude of professionals. It's going to take time. It's going to take weeks and months to get this under control. But the point is, the child has to be told that no more do you hit your brother. No more do you hit your sister. No more do you hit me as a mother. No more do you hit your father. No more do you hit your grandparent. You know, and whatever else is going on. The child has to be very, very clearly and decisively told that is an inappropriate behavior, and it will not occur and does not occur. And if it does, it's a violent behavior. Police are called. CPS is called. Sometimes you have to bring in the authorities to help bring it under control. And sometimes you have to have the police arrest the child for aggressive behavior towards another. And sometimes the CPS has to see how that child is out of control, but not because parent abuse, but because the child is not able to control himself and abuses others. So in other words, authorities sometimes have to be brought into it. But a parent has to make the decision, are we going to stop this behavior or not? Are we going to play a game or are we going to be serious? Are we going to do what would be right and proper and good and corrective? Or are we just going to try to manage and get by with and cope with a very difficult situation? Well, those are questions and those are issues. So the issue of childhood violence, pre-teenage violence, early teenage violence, is a tough one. But, you know, it's workable, it's resolvable, it's treatable, and it's manageable and changeable. Have hope, but have firmness, but work with a therapist that is skilled and knowledgeable and experienced and trained in dealing with this kind of behavior. Not every psychologist can do it. Not every marriage and family counselor can do it. You have to find a therapist that can work with you and be very firm and very tough and set the boundaries and help you set the boundaries. And sometimes you have to go to a second therapist or a third therapist to find one that will work with you and that you can work with them and you can form a team. So just because you start with a therapist doesn't mean that that therapist is going to be your answer or to help you get the answers. You may have to go to another one. But feel free to do that. Ask for referrals. Ask people who've been through this kind of situation again. Ask people who have experienced it. See what they've done. Get names. But find a therapist that is skilled and trained in working with adolescent, pre-adolescent kids who are violent. Okay, that's it for today, but I want to bring to your attention the Green Gables Care Home. If you have a parent, you have a grandparent that needs care in an assisted living facility because they're getting older or because there's dementia or because there's a major medical problem that requires intensive care, consider the Green Gables Care Home. They have 6 or 7 homes in the Clovis area. Each home is small, but there probably is room for you when there are 6 or 7 homes with about 4 to 5 beds or 6 beds per house. So give them a call. See if there's room for you and if this is a place that might meet the needs that you have in your family. Here's the number to call because it works well for you. 559-250-7783. Okay? 250-7783. And a second phone number, if that one is busy, 559-307-0950. So give them a call, Green Gables Care Home in Clovis, if you have a need for the care of an elderly person because of age or dementia or medical situation or personal limitations of some kind. Let's see if they can be of help to you. Okay, bye for now.